Welcome, everyone, to the April 25th regular Othello City Council meeting tonight. I'd like to call this meeting to order at 6:30, and if you would all please rise for an invocation and the Pledge of Allegiance. I'd like everyone to pray for a blessing upon this city and upon the council and the wisdom as we go forward to make plans to make this city great. So if everybody would just bow in silent prayer for a moment. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Tonight I see on item 1.4 roll call, all council members are present. And so I'll move to item 1.5, citizen input. This is the segment of the city council meeting where the citizens of this community have an opportunity to address the Othello City Council with regard to any issue. Is there anyone here tonight who's here to address the council? Please raise your hand, I'll recognize you. Okay, seeing none. We'll move to item 2, the approval of our agenda tonight. I'd entertain a motion for that.
I'll make that motion.
Second. We have a motion made and seconded to approve our agenda tonight. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I'd entertain a motion to approve our consent agenda tonight.
I'd make that motion.
Second.
Before we vote on that, I do want to point out that on 3.5, we are setting the public hearing for May 9th for the Planning Commission recommendation on the marijuana processing, producing, and retail facility in the city. So as that material that comes from the Planning Commission and also produced by Travis and legal counsel, I'd like you guys to review that and you're ready for that discussion on that evening. Okay, because we're going to have a public hearing. All right, so all those in favor of our tonight's consent agenda, please signify by saying, or I need a motion, I'm sorry.
We have a motion.
Sorry. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Moving on to our current business, 4.1, I have the pleasure tonight of swearing in the new sergeant into the Othello Police Department. And I'd like to call forward Sergeant David Veloz. Sergeant David was born and raised in Texas. In October of 2003, Sergeant Veloz joined the United States Army. And during this time, he was promoted to sergeant in charge of battalion aid and a station of 729 infantry soldiers. He was responsible for maintenance and accountability of all assigned equipment and four soldiers. He was also responsible for the day-to-day operation of his unit. He was hired with the Othello Police Department June 5th, 2012, and he was assigned to a detective last June 2015. And he was just recently promoted to sergeant April 14th, 2016. Sergeant Veloz and his wife Anna have a daughter. And with that, I would like to administer the oath of office. If you would, David, would you please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Sergeant David Veloz,
I, Sergeant David Veloz,
do solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States,
that I will support the Constitution of the United States,
and the Constitution and laws of the State of Washington,
the Constitution and laws of the State of Washington,
and the Charter and ordinances of the City of Othello, Washington. Yep. And abide by the Law Enforcement Code of Ethics,
and abide by the Law Enforcement Code of Ethics,
as adopted by the Othello Police Department,
as adopted by the Othello Police Department,
and that I will faithfully and honestly,
and that I will faithfully and honestly,
and impartially, perform and discharge,
the duties of a police sergeant,
during my continuance as such. So help me God. Congratulations, Sergeant. Joseph, you and I are going to sign this right now.
Of course.
Making the act official.
Does he need it?
At this time, I'd like to call forward Police Chief Bill Shane.
Thank you, sir. As a police officer, we're sworn to serve and protect. In this service, we put others' lives before our own. As a sergeant, you will lead others as they do so. You will represent the standards and integrity of our department. As part of our tradition, your wife will pin your collar brass. I can actually remember when that happened to me years and years ago, and actually I had my parents do that in front of the city council. At this point, I'll give you the brass. I'd like to invite your wife to come up. Try not to drop water. But you can if you need to. Sergeant Velos is our fourth sergeant. We're now fully staffed with sergeants. We still have one vacancy as an officer that we're working to fill now.
Thank you, Chief. Sergeant Velos, would you like to address the crowd and say a few words before?
I'd just like to say thank you to the sergeants that are here for support and the assistant chief and the chief for their mentor. They mentored me through the process. I've only been here for 4 years. And I just wanted to say thank you, and I love working for the city of Los Alamos. Just want to say thank you to all of you, Sergeant, Assistant Chief, and Chief for the mentorship that they've given me through my career.
Congratulations, Sergeant. We're very proud of you. Now we'll move up to item 4.2, bond refinance ordinance. Spencer.
Thank you very much. For the last couple of meetings, we've been discussing the possible refinancing of our Main Street bond, almost $3.2 million. We can take advantage of some lower interest rates and save the city some money. At our last meeting, we discussed a few different options. We selected option two up here to retire these bonds a year earlier and save about $250,000, $263,000 approximately. At that meeting, we had two different options for moving forward. One is to get the wheels in motion. About 30 days from now, we'll have our final numbers, our final rate, and we can have a special meeting at that time to say sign on the dotted line. Or as council elected at our last meeting, or wanted to do at our last meeting, council wanted us to prepare an ordinance that allows staff to go ahead at that point 30 days from now, instead of having that special meeting. So we have an ordinance prepared for your review tonight, and Scott from K&L Gates, who's our bond counsel, is here to discuss some of the particulars about that ordinance that we can move forward with.
And thank you for moving me up the agenda. Usually by the time bond counsel comes on, the room has cleared. There's
There's no one left who wants to listen to the lawyers, so I'm glad to have a captive audience tonight. I'll try not to take too much of your time, because I know no one loves 80 pages of ordinances as much as I do, but if you have any questions about bond law, happy to run through it as long as your patience holds out. So the ordinance you have before you for consideration tonight, as Spencer said, is an alternative to coming back when the market is hot. So Spencer's going to be working with your financial advisors, with the underwriting team to figure out what's the best time to price these markets, who knows what China's doing, what's happening in Greece, what's happening with Puerto Rico bonds, when's the best time to price and sell these bonds, and you're not going to know in advance what day that is. They'll have a rough sense of timing, but it might happen anytime during the week, and it's generally considered a hassle to come back for a special meeting just to approve the issuance of the bonds and pass the ordinance then. Instead, what you see most governmental entities doing, there's been a big shift over the last 5 years to passing these delegation resolutions, where you essentially box in the administration's authority and their different parameters under which they can operate. Say, if you can get me a deal that's at least this good or better, go ahead and issue the bonds, and then come back and tell me the report at the end. So, to that end, you're authorizing the refunding of your 2010 LTGOs, as you've been discussing. You kind of talked through the different plans and strategies for where the sweet spot is for savings versus longest maturity, and you've provided direction for that. There's about $3.2 million outstanding on it, but you're providing a maximum authorization of 3.6, which is to say, if interest rates bump up in the market, you might have to issue a little bit more than the 3.2 to get that full refunding amount. So you're giving them a little bit of buffer on that ceiling for the upper end, but just a little bit of buffer. You can't go out and issue 10 million in bonds just because you're sure you can find a use for spending it. Other authorization targets are there has to be a certain amount of savings. Don't bother issuing these bonds if it's not going to be a good deal for the city. So if there's not 230 grand worth of savings, come back and talk to us. Let's see if it's still something we want to pursue. The other parameter is this is not an open-ended authorization. This is probably, like Spencer said, going to happen in the next 30 days, but maybe markets go crazy. It'll stay open for this year. So you've authorized it through December 1st, 2016, if you accept this ordinance. And if it hasn't been done by December 1st, 2016, come back and talk some more. And then other than that, if the deal can be made, as good of a deal as that, within the amount we've authorized for you, then any of the city representatives, the mayor, the finance officer, or the city administrator, is authorized to negotiate the bond purchase agreement with the underwriters. And once that's done, they can do all the closing documents. There'll be some for the council to do as well. And there's a reporting back to you stage, so it doesn't happen in the void, and you're left to wonder how good a deal you got. There's a closing the loop, come back and give you a report at the end of it. Otherwise, the ordinance is very much the same as other times you've been in the market. That's not your first time to the rodeo. K&L Gates has been your bond counsel for 40 plus years, not me personally, but wiser heads than mine. And we're delighted to be here again, but you'll see the ordinance has all the tax language that satisfies federal tax requirements you're used to. It provides for continuing disclosure, which is to say you're going to post your audited financials up to the databases so that the investing public has access to see how you're still doing and evaluate your credit. All the standard stuff that makes it valid to authorize the debt of the city that bondholders will be sure you're going to pay back is contained in here. If you want details on any of that, happy to delve in, but I figure you probably don't want that sort of a page turn. Any questions on the delegating resolution? Otherwise, happy to field it. Otherwise, I'll close with kind of the standard reminder of conflicts of interest. Should a broker or an agent ever call you up and offer you your own bonds, probably should decline to accept them to avoid any appearances of conflicts. Otherwise, happy to field any questions.
Council?
Some of you were gone, so I just wanted to make sure you were able to ask questions. Okay. So just as the process has evolved, we had Spencer, our finance officer, was looking to see if there would be any savings because of the drop in interest rates. He sought out a party who was Andrew Face and his company. And then in order for any city to move forward, they have to have our own separate bond counsel, which is legal counsel. because of it's public money, it's scrutinized, we have to do it right. And so we have Scott here tonight with us to, if there's any concern about any of the legal issues, what actions we're taking. I think as far as the end result, I think we're all in agreement that we need to take advantage of the savings. In this last meeting, we voted to take option B, which was the keep the payments essentially the same and pay it off 1 year early because of the interest savings. Am I good so far?
Yep, perfect.
Okay, so does anybody have any questions about that? Any comment from our counsel, Kelly? All right. So with that then, I would entertain a motion to approve this ordinance allowing staff to move forward with the bond refinance.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
So now we have the pleasure of having with us tonight Jesse Calger of Burrell and Associates and also Tim Flynn of Aspect Engineering. They are going to give us they actually have a presentation for us on the water supply study that they've been working on for some time. And Jesse, I'm going to let you take it from here.
Thanks. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thanks for having us. And a couple of things just starting way up high on this. As things start warming up this spring, I don't know if anyone was sort of having any flashbacks to last summer, remembering how hot it got, how hard it was to keep the city in water, all those things. So if any of those things have come up in your mind, hopefully tonight as we go through this, we can give you a sort of a picture of where the water system is currently at, what it might do in the future, and how you can achieve those goals. And the other thing that happened semi-recently here was the city just adopted the comprehensive plan that Travis has been working on so hard. And that comprehensive plan lays out this this vision for growth in the city. And one of the key components for growth is having water supply available. So this there's several things we're going to cover tonight. I guess I'll go to the kind of our agenda here. There's an overall water supply strategy that we've been working with city staff, and Tim Flynn at Aspect and I have also been working on that. So we'll give you some of the details on that. We'll give you an overview of how much water the city's currently using, how much you have a right to use under your current groundwater rights. And then we'll go into some of the methodologies for estimating what your future demands look like, what some of the assumptions that are going to affect that are, and how that also kind of controls where you might need to develop an additional supplemental supply, maybe something other than groundwater. So right now, it looks like the city can rely on groundwater in the near to midterm, but in the future, there's going to, if the city wants to realize the growth that's laid out in the comp plan, there's probably going to need to be some kind of supplemental water source or something done on potentially the industrial waste and treatment reuse side of things. So there's several different factors that are going to affect the city's need for water. And we're starting to parse some of those out and getting studies going along these different tracks to bring the city a path toward that vision of growth that really allows you to realize it, at least on the water side. And like I said, the wastewater and the industrial wastewater side also affect those. So there's a lot of different fingers that go into this planning, but just wanted to, like I said, as spring comes and everyone's starting to think about, oh yeah, water's gonna be used a lot this summer, give you guys an update on that. So and then at the very end there, we'll hit kind of the actions and next steps for moving that forward. And so we're going to be tag teaming this, jumping back up and forth here. But,
yeah, good evening. Thank you for having us again. My name is Tim Flynn. I'm with Aspect Consulting. I'm a groundwater specialist, and I've had the pleasure to work with the city starting in the latter part of 2014. And as part of that, I want to say that the city has been very proactive. It recognizes, as Jesse said, the need for water supply and the fact that it's a constrained resource. And I just wanted to recap some work that we did back in 2014, and there's actually a memo, it's got a lot of details, and I'm going to stay pretty high level, but just wanted to refresh everybody's memory on that. It looked at laying out both the constraints the city faces, as well as some options and recommendations, both near-term and also, as Jesse indicated, long-term, and really long-term in terms of assisting the city in meeting its vision goals. As you are well aware, the city is dependent on groundwater for its supply, and that groundwater system in the greater, you're part of the greater Columbia Basin, has certainly been taxed. So we have some constraints, both in the ag, greater ag industry, but also municipalities. Some of that work came to light, certainly it was not news to the city, but it came to light in a report that was done by the Columbia Basin Groundwater Management Area. We refer to it as the GWAMA report. And I believe that group may have spoken to the city some time ago. We were asked to come in and sort of do an independent assessment as a starting point on that, and that report had made some assumptions, and frankly, certainly fairly would be suggested that it was probably worst case. It was suggesting the city was going to run out of water as early as 2015. That did not happen. I think that was critically related to some of the assumptions on how demand would play out in recent times. More importantly, the city nonetheless took stock in concerns, and we laid out some strategies both in the near term and long term to make sure the city had adequate supply. And that's really what we're going to talk about tonight. And one of the elements of that is updating the water system plan. As I mentioned, the GWAMA report was predicated on some demand assumptions, which I think were worst case. And I think what Jesse's going to do is just walk you through some of the more updated analysis on that, and then I will take over and talk about some of these strategies.
So these next few slides kind of have a lot of numbers on them, and I'm going to try and just give you some visual images so you can associate them with what something other than numbers on a page. And then we have some graphs also. So as I said before, the adequacy of the existing supply depends on how quickly the city grows. So you've got a couple of slides here just on what your existing demands are, and then a look at some of the assumptions on how we can project those out and what that might mean for when that transition between groundwater supply reliance to probably a supplemental source would look like. So right now the city's using about 1,700 million gallons a year. If you equate that to sort of your average day throughout the year, it's about 4.7 million gallons a day. And so trying to visualize what's a million gallons look like. If you think about those two tanks that are in Lyons Park there, one's a 1 million gallon, the other is a 3 million gallon. So together, those are about 4 million gallons. So if you figure on your average day, you're using those full volumes just a little more than once. And on your max day, you're using that full volume almost twice for the whole city. So those are just kind of give you some visual things to think about on that. And then it sort of the peak demand which is usually in the morning or in the afternoon, depending, you know, who has their sprinklers set to come on in the morning. City uses about 8,000 gallons a minute. And right now, the breakdown between industrial users versus non-industrial users is almost two-thirds go to the industrial users. So it's a really significant fraction of the city's overall water demand. And the city's current data shows that there's very little leakage. Some of the numbers are being looked at a little closer just to make sure that everything looks good. But right now, yeah, it looks like there's very little leakage. So that's a good thing for the city. The other thing that affects city's ability to use groundwater supply is the water rights that you have to use it. So there's annual and instantaneous rights. Right now, the city has about 7,100 acre feet, and you're using about 75% of that annually. And on the instantaneous side, you have the right to use about 9,500 gallons per minute. And only coincidentally, you're using 75% of those. That number wouldn't necessarily be the same, but that's the way it's worked out so far. And so the groundwater rights that you have right now, you could acquire more, but they're difficult to acquire more. So that's one of the basic limiting factors as you continue to rely on groundwater. And as I said, the comprehensive plan shows the current population around 7,700, growing to a 20-year population of 17,825, which equates to an annual growth rate of 4.23. So that's a huge growth rate for cities. And like I said, it's a really ambitious plan for the city to be moving toward. So if that's the case, your industrial users wouldn't necessarily grow at the same rate as your population, because, you know, people would be coming in, but your industrial users wouldn't necessarily be using more until a new industry moved to town or one of the existing ones expanded. So this is where we'll get to the graphs here on what might affect how you project water needs for the future. So the red one, the laser, isn't it? Yeah, okay. So it doesn't show up very well, but there's the red demand on the top here, and there's the orange demand on the bottom. The orange is an industrial user, the industrial uses for the city. The red would be non-industrial users projected at that growth rate. And the green line is the limit of the annual water rights. So what this graph shows is basically that if no new industrial users came to town, but all the population growth occurred exactly as the comp plan shows, then city water rights would be exhausted, you know, close to 20 years, you know, 16 to 17 years. And you look at that graph and you kind of go, no, we're not doing so bad. But there's, if the city wants to attract industry and have additional industrial users, which seems to be the city's goal, that bottom fraction isn't going to stay constant. So the next graph we have here shows just a constant growth rate on the bottom. But again, a constant growth rate isn't necessarily representative of reality, in that, you know, if a new industry comes to town or an existing user expands, it's bam, a big incremental jump, as opposed to constant growth like that. So the third one we have here is sort of a incremental growth, as if a new sim plot came to town, or, you know, one of the existing ones doubles in size. So that green line, you can see, instead of crossing the demand curve, you know, out of 17 or 18 years, and that would be, you know, whenever a new industry comes to town. So the big take home thing here is that the city can rely on groundwater supply for sort of the slow, steady growth. You can do that for a while, but if you really want to drive sort of the industrial growth, groundwater supply is only an interim solution. And exactly when that occurs, you know, depends on a lot of other factors, but I guess we just wanted the council to see the different assumptions that go into projecting when that might occur. And then also, when we get to the next steps, you can give us feedback on, okay, we really do want to plan for, you know, this kind of incremental growth, or no, I think it's going to be more the kind of the somewhere in between there. So it just want to give you information and then allow you to give us feedback on what you're hoping for with the city. So it's back to Tim.
So in the near term, I would define in the 5 to 10 year horizon, as Jesse indicated, it's really predicated on sustaining the groundwater resource and, to the extent necessary, expanding that resource. But there's a number of ways to get at the water supply, and one of them is on the demand side. One of the more significant things that's happened is some change in the industrial demand. McCain Foods, up until, I guess, about a year ago, was purchasing water from the city due to its own water supply or groundwater supply constraints. We actually assisted McCain Foods, and certainly John has took a big part of that in putting in a new well called well number 4. It's on the west end of town, and I think that has allowed the city to be self-sufficient and essentially has freed up supply from the city, because it's no longer needing that supply. On the source side, the well field capacity is really constrained by two constraints. One is a regional depletion. What we're seeing, and again, just years of pumping and dependence on pumping, both in ag and then in these more urban centers, a depletion in that resource. And so there's this decline that's occurring on an annual basis, and so we have to keep up with that capacity. And then the second is just deterioration of wells. And so one of the actions that we took, and we recently issued a report, a memo earlier this year, was looking at all of the existing wells the city has and whether there's opportunities to basically rehabilitate or improve their capacity. And I won't get into the details that's in that memo. Of the wells you have, there is one that could be rehabbed, it's called well number seven. We're looking at several hundred gallon per minute improvement, but those are the kinds of things the city can stay on top of, again, to try to sustain the capacity of its existing infrastructure. The other key one is increasing capacity with well number nine, which is coming online, and that's a significant source, kind of similar to what McCain did, which they developed a supply on the west side of town. The city moved to develop a supply on the east side of town, quite a distance from the existing pumping center. And I have to say that's an important fact. We historically, a lot of the wells were consolidated or constrained in a small area. Moving outside of town, I think, will help sustain the capacity of the wells. So I think the move, spreading the pumping in the area, is a positive thing. In terms of additional groundwater development, certainly over time we'll continue to see regional water levels decline. I think that's just a fact with us. The state is taking a lot of measures to do source exchange with ag, but I don't think that's going to reverse the trend. It's just going to slow it down. And so we are in the process of making some recommendations to the city on where would you go for future groundwater development. And there's really two possibilities. One is additional development in the Wanapum, despite the fact that it's declining, moving outside the urban center, two possible locations, and I have a map here. Possibly an additional well in the vicinity of well number nine, that's that new well outside of town. And one other area that at least we've been discussing is the possibility of if there's funds available to develop a well on the southwest side of town related to kind of a dual purpose of assisting some of these satellite group B or smaller water systems that the city currently has interties with. That's really predicated on funding. When you have some of these challenge systems, there are funds oftentimes available from the Department of Health. And that may stretch the city's dollars further in terms of water supply. And then the other is Grand Run. And I think that's been discussed in generalities. This is a deeper basalt unit. And we're looking at strategies to look at that as a possible source. Currently, that deeper aquifer is not tapped in the region, but it also oftentimes has some constraints, such as water quality. So it's, I think the Wanapum is a sure thing. The Grand Ron is more of an exploratory option. And then there's the long-term look. And as Jesse indicated, to the extent that the city is looking to expand, for example, in industrial users, I think that's going to exhaust the kinds of long-term supplies that groundwater could afford. I think we're looking at a supplemental surface water supply. We've already had some initial discussions with the Bureau of Reclamation in terms of the availability of what's called M&I, or municipal and industrial supplies, and they have gone so far as to look at alignments to bring that into the city. The challenge with that, the M&I water is available to the city. The challenge with that is that it requires treatment to be used. One of the concepts that we're looking at is, to the extent that a treatment plant were to be built, a water treatment plant, one strategy that can greatly improve the use and cost effectiveness of such a plan is to couple it with what's referred to as aquifer storage and recovery. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute. The city has actually been successful and right on the cusp of getting a grant from the Department of Ecology to look at the feasibility of aquifer storage and recovery and how it might tie into the city's long-term water supply system. But essentially, when the treatment plan is not needed to support ongoing supply during peak times, this would be like in the evenings and during the winter, for example, that treatment capacity can be used to treat water and inject that water into the aquifer and essentially use our existing groundwater system and our wells as a reservoir. And that's a technology that's not seeing great applications. About six projects in the state of Washington today, and it's largely municipal, where they're using existing surface water capacity to treat water, store it in the aquifer, and then recover it, particularly during the summertime when you have peak demand. Some other strategies that we're looking at would be an alternative to Bureau of Reclamation supplies, which you do have to purchase, is the possibility of using reclaimed water. The town has access to certainly tremendous quantities of food processor wastewater, which I would frankly call gray water. It is, you know, in some cases, it's just used to wash raw material, raw product coming into the plant. And certainly that, and that water is currently being used for irrigation. Certainly it would require treatment, but that could make available a significant quantity of water, and there's oftentimes a lot of funding available for water reuse. And then lastly, one of the areas, one of the strategies that, or options, excuse me, that we have not looked at, but I just wanted to bring it up in case you hear about it. Ecology is designated an area in a broader Odessa called 50814, and I don't frankly know how it got that number, but they call it the 50814 area. And essentially, after many, many years of Bureau of Reclamation transmitting large quantities of surface water in unlined canals, a lot of that water leaks, and it's filled up very shallow aquifers. And Bureau of Reclamation claims that as their water, but in collaboration with the state, the Bureau will be issuing leases for that groundwater. And so that certainly is an option. The bulk of that water is south of the city. It would require a pipeline. But again, I bring it up just so you're aware that we've certainly considered it as an option. The downside to it is, just like surface water, it likely has nutrients and other constituents that would require treatment. So it's not, doesn't necessarily afford a cheaper option. I'm going to stop there just for a minute and just make sure that we've covered a lot. Is there any questions that we could speak to before we kind of get to some conclusionary statements?
So does the M&I water take more treatment than that water that leaks up from the canals?
No, I'd say it's about the same.
About the same?
Yeah. As I mentioned, it's typically nutrients, and you're going to have nutrients, whether it's the canal water or it's that 5018 water.
So if we're pulling M&I water and put it back in the aquifer, right, so what would be cheaper, that or just to pull direct through a pipeline from that water that's leaking from the canal? Do you have an idea?
I think the it could be a wash, only because with the M&I water, it's going to be leased water either way. It's leased water, M&I water in the canal, it has to be treated. So you've got the, and there's limited transmission costs because of the canal system comes through town. Matter of fact, East Lateral 68 is very close to a lot of the wells. So its main cost with the M&I water is that treatment. With the groundwater, it would be conveyance. It's likely the source of that water is going to be several miles to the south. It would have to be conveyed to the city, treated, and then used. Okay. So it's kind of a wash.
Kind of a wash, okay.
Yeah. Any other questions? Kind of generalized question.
Could you speak to the, Tim, you said there were six other aquifer storage and recovery models taking place right now in the state of Washington, and how long have they had enough time to come to any conclusions about their success and viability?
I'll just quickly summarize where they are. And by the way, there's only a few that are in, none of them are in permanent operation in terms of fully permitted. They're in sort of extended pilots, and they range considerably in the quantities. For example, right now, we're in the process of getting a reservoir permit for a city white salmon. It's on the low end in terms of quantities, about 100 acre feet of water per year. It represents about 25% of their peak supply in the summer. It's kind of on the small end, okay? They've got the benefit if they had a water treatment plant in place, they had a source of supply, and they have wells that are depleting, not that dissimilar from City of Othello. On the high end would be City of Walla Walla. They recharge about 20, their goal is to recharge about 20,000 acre feet a year. They are often pilot. City of Kennewick is probably in the tune of about 500 acre feet a year. City of Yakima, about 10,000 acre feet a year, just to give you some examples. The technology is proven. It does vary depending on the location. The majority of the projects are in basalt, very much like the City of Othello, with a few exceptions. My firm's now working with Seattle Public Utility, very large utility, and we're doing an aquifer storage and recovery project in what's called the Highline area. It's the SeaTac. and they're looking at probably 1,500 acre feet. But I would say that the city's system, the geology here affords application of ASR, and I think it would be very successful. And some of the strategies that we would look at would be to inject in some of your wells where we can actually have the benefit of surrounding wells to recover, and that should improve the efficiency. The other benefit is you have delivery. You have water delivered here. So the main constraint for the city is finding, is to put together a strategy for funding of treatment. And that's part of a long-term plan. So I'm just going to wrap up, and I guess Justin and I are going to just tag team on this. Certainly the well number 9 is in the process of being brought online, and I think that will serve the city well, along with the reduction in demand, as I mentioned, from the canned foods in terms of meeting that source capacity in the near term. As I mentioned, we are embarking upon this aquifer storage and recovery feasibility study. One of the first tasks that we'll complete is looking at design of a pilot study where we'll actually do a demonstration injection. And we're doing that out of the gates. Ecology has agreed to put a funding request in the next biennium to fund that pilot. And so that work needs to be done by the end of this fiscal year, which is by June 30th. So I think they're committed, the state is committed, to not only doing the feasibility study, but also moving into pilot. My firm is in the process with Varela of completing a groundwater source evaluation that gets at this question of, if you were to drill new wells, where would they be located, and what are the pros and cons in terms of recommendation on the Wanapum versus the Grand Ronde? So those are the actions that are being taken. We've been sort of moving through the recommendations that were laid out in that plan back in 2014. Some of the other things that are into the future here, one is updating the water system plan, which Varela, there's some discussions on that. I think that's a key part, particularly get a handle on demand and sort of forecasting when that future demand, such as an industrial user, might come online. I think that's an important planning tool. And then lastly, and probably most importantly, is continuing to look further at surface water treatment options and or reclaimed water. I think those are two key things to support ASR and, again, it's been stated, to support the city's vision for growth. And that's it.
Jumping back to sort of that big picture of what we're proposing for the city in terms of the overall supply plan, looking at those demand curves, seeing where those lines cross depending on what happens with your other industries and other growth in town, what we're basically proposing to the city is that there'll be some sort of near-term groundwater supply development, probably up to the limit of your water rights. That's one threshold, because you wouldn't necessarily want to pursue additional groundwater rights if it's a resource that is diminishing and going away anyway. And the long-term supply plan being at least augmenting or supplementing the surface water. So I guess we just wanted the council to see and understand that if you were sitting here going, hey, we're projecting huge growth, why isn't a bunch more groundwater being developed at a quicker pace, that sort of thing, those are the reasons for it. Are there any questions on that, or is it clear and it's just like, yeah, go ahead, guys, keep moving in the direction you're in?
I got one question.
Yeah.
On the, you have industrial users make up roughly 60%, 64% of the city water demand. Is that including McCain's?
So McCain's use was intermittent mostly for those figures. Those figures are developed off of 2013, 2014, and 2015. And correct me if I've got incorrect information here, John, but that it was only intermittently relied on there. So I think they make up maybe 5% of that 60 in terms of annual demand. I mean, when they used it, it was, 700 or 800 gallons a minute? But it was only for intermittent periods. So
they used about 20% when they used it then?
Well, in terms of flow rate, yeah, but in terms of annual, it was not a huge amount of your annual. They mostly supplied themselves.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that I think what Jesse said is correct. The issue was when it was needed, it was those peak critical times. So it was really a capacity issue. It's less about the total volume. It's really, I think it's a summertime period where the peak demand was up. That was taxing to the city.
So are you guys running full bore now, John? Are you guys using any city water?
No, we use city water for potable water supply for restrooms, sinks, and labs and things like that. We do have a usage. It's nothing compared to what it was when we were using it for processed water. So we stand alone today on our processed water. We utilize about 1.7 million gallons a day, but that's our own water. That's what we're using under our certificate from the city for a day for potable water and stuff. It's probably 25,000-30,000 gallons a day.
So it's a lot less now, because now during them years you were going up and down, especially last year.
Starting,
you were going up and down,
in
right?
July.
So starting in July.
July of 2015, we went online with our own well and we shut the city valve. So we haven't been taking any water for.
So these figures are before July then? I think that's what.
They are, but the most of those figures are annual figures. And so, like, the nice thing for the city in terms of not having McCain putting demand on the system during peak periods is, like, in the summer, you keep your reservoirs full now, but it's not going to have as big of an effect on your annual usage, because it was only intermittent that they were relying on the city's sources as a source.
We had a pretty steady flow. We had anywhere from 500 to 800 gallons a minute demand from the city over the course of two years as our water supply diminished. So it was substantial, nothing compared to Simplot, but Simplot has a contract with the city. They wouldn't be here if they didn't.
So if Simplot leaves, what do we have that's going to be, what's the usage?
We lose about 500 jobs.
I know about the jobs. What are we doing? What are we losing gallon-wise?
Well, I mean, you don't have something to... they do about 2 million gallons a day, probably.
2,500 gallons a minute.
2,500 a minute.
Between 2,000 and 25, but... All right, you're here.
Yeah.
That's quite a bit.
We'd have a lot more water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe one of the... Maybe a more positive way to look at it was if there were industrial treatment and reuse available and that water could be recycled, you still get all that capacity back in terms of your supply, because the water is being cleaned and recycled as opposed to used and then irrigated on a field or however they're disposing of it. So, yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason looking at those curves where it's like, okay, if industrial demand is gonna grow, not even just stay constant, then there's a couple of different paths that need pursued here, whether it's industrial treatment and reuse or whether it's surface water supply and augmentation with ASR, those sorts of things. So,
but if Simplot were to leave, and then if you go to one of your charts, I forgot where it's at, where if no industries come in, we're not going to peak out till 2025, 2030 as far as just for residential. So if they were to leave, I think we'd be okay right there.
Yeah.
Unless other industries came in.
Yes.
Well, if Simplot closes their doors for whatever reason, you think they might close their door, somebody else is going to pick them up.
Absolutely.
That'd be...
Open the door for somebody else.
Good.
We're the cheapest place in the nation to locate a beverage
they may,
or a food process.
Simplot may choose not to run the Othello facility any longer for whatever reason, but that doesn't mean somebody else wouldn't be willing to.
Something else to keep in mind, too. And they didn't really, Jesse or Tim didn't really address this, is that the water levels in our wells are continuing to decline. So there's just some water rights right there. That's assuming that we're going to do stuff to maintain our water rights. So even if Simplot leaves and nobody replaces it, our level, if we do nothing, our water in our wells is going down, down, down. So we still have to do something.
We do.
Yeah, so that's the idea.
Yep. So moving forward in the future, when we talk about using reclaimed water, right now you have two facilities that have their own waste treatment systems.
They operate, you know, annually under five-year programs from the permits, you know, from the Department of Ecology. How do you entice them to invest in a water reclaim system for, you know, aquifer storage? How do you do that? Or do you do it on your own and then get a payback from them for utilizing your system? But it's got to be a charge less than what they operate for today.
Yeah, and there's actually two issues there. One is, how do you get industry to participate?
But you can't commingle this with city sewage. This has got to be just industrial water.
No, it'd be.
So, which is what they call non-biological, you know, waste. So you've got to have an entirely different system for the industrial users to all return water to a treatment plant that can be cleaned up and returned to the aquifer system for storage. But then you still have to deal with your city and your city sewer in your cities.
So what we would envision is a partnership that would involve industry and the city and the state and federal government to show all the reuse we would get. There would have to be incentives, obviously, for industry to do that. The incentive would be, hey, you know, remember summer of 15 when you almost ran out of water? Well, we're going to fix it so you never run out of water and never have that issue again. And then the other incentive would be, we would run the plant, perhaps. And I'm just throwing stuff, you know, off the top of my head, with something Tim and I discussed earlier today. So, you know, help us build the plant. We'll use our funds that we were putting back for digging more wells to run the plant, so you don't have to worry about it. You get the water at some reduced rate, perhaps, and we treat it for you, and we have this loop where we keep using the water to both recharge the aquifer and to supply the plants. And that's...
But how do you entice them to sign up for it?
That's yet to be determined.
We currently have a system for both getting water and for getting rid of it.
Yeah.
And it has a cost. And if your cost exceeds what our costs are today, it ain't going to even be considered.
So the enticement would be that is the water rates. If we have to continue to pursue other sources of water, the water rates are going to continue to climb.
We're unique in that respect, that we do have water rights, and that
you
guys do have the ability to get water, you know, wherever it's available.
So we would appeal to your civic duty to, no.
John, I might just add, I think certainly in the short term, in the 5 to 10 year horizon, possibly your points well taken, I do think that you might say we're all in this together. There is a question about future long-term sustainability, and that question mark about future long-term sustainability is a risk factor.
Okay,
that's a key thing. But I might just say one other thing about the sustainability. The other piece is that, to the extent that the investment were made in treatment, water treatment reuse, it carries with it one other very key thing: expansion. And if there's one thing I'm hearing about is industry wanting not only to know that it can sustain, right, its current operation, because it's got a lot of capital tied up, but the opportunity to expand. That's a key thing. So that's your point's well taken, that the economics have to make sense. There has to be an economic incentive. But I also think there's a long-term risk factor that if we do nothing, we kind of share that risk. And that's not a good outcome.
No, but it's called municipal and industrial water. So every industry that comes into this area has the ability to purchase water from the Bureau of Reclamation. If they so wish to capitalize their own water treatment facility, they could put in their own and utilize the 9 months a year that we have available to us, municipal industrial water.
And I would say that that's absolutely right, and I didn't want to mislead. I think there's two options on the table here. One is, as we've been talking about, is purchase, and the city has inquired, and there certainly is M&I water available from the city. But building a treatment plant to address that has a cost, right? And there are some funding streams to assist with that cost. I think what appeals to the industrial wastewater side is that there's a cost there too, possibly a higher cost, but there are far more state initiatives today encouraging water reuse that actually may make industrial water treatment on a level playing field. And that's yet, we need to explore that. I don't think we've got the answer.
I just want everybody to think, you know, we want to make this as realistic as possible. And in order to entice industry to do what we think we need to do to sustain this area, it's got to be equitable form too.
And it's not going to happen on any one single entity's shoulders. I think it's going to be a collaborative public-private sector endeavor.
Don't get me wrong, I feel they would be willing to pay for both, you know, receiving water and also for somebody cleaning up their water. You know, that service, they would be willing to do that. But it just cannot be outrageous. It's got to be realistic.
Did you have something you wanted to add?
The other thing I wanted to add to that was having a partnership between government agencies and the relationship we have with our regulating agencies gives us the opportunity to go after grant funds. So whereas there might be a large outlay for infrastructure, if we can get a large percentage of that done by grants, it gives the opportunity for somebody like McCain or Simplot to get in on the ground floor. And if it's a 50% match for grants for the installation, you would have to weigh, or companies would have to ultimately weigh, okay, do I get in at 50 cents on the dollar, or do I wait and hope I never have to buy in? And then when you buy in, you're paying the dollar on the dollar. So that's kind of, I think, how we would sweeten the pot is we'd go after every source we possibly could, whether it's grants, low interest loans, and those kind of issues.
Thank you, Travis. Okay, well, can we go back to the action plan?
Well, you know, and I think Tim summed it up, but yeah, I just wanted to...
Yeah, because I'd like to finish on that.
Yeah, it was too far. Spencer, help me out.
The last slide. Yeah.
So I kind of summed it up, you know, like we're finishing up the groundwater supply study right now, and so we've done the evaluation of your wells, made some recommendations on some modest gains you can get through rehab and that. And then we're going to be laying out a plan for additional groundwater supply for sort of that near-term keep up with demand, figure out the plan for the long-term solution, whether it's surface water treatment with ASR. So we'll be pulling all that together with recommendations for the city. And then when we get to doing the water system plan, it'll lay out the broader water infrastructure, not just sources of supply, but transmission, distribution, storage, all those elements. So, put a lot of information in front of you. We can be available now, later, if you got more questions, but that's what's coming in the months to come here.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay, but Jesse, you're not done.
It's true, I'm not. But, okay, Council of Mayor, this is Jake Younger, and he's one of the engineers on our office. We've got some items to address on a couple of projects for you. One is on the well pump station, the other's on the street project that's going on. Jake's going to give you the details on that, and if there's questions from council on bigger picture stuff, I can field them, but I'm going to let Jake present the items that are on the agenda.
Thank you.
Yep.
Jake?
Yep. Thanks. It's a privilege to be here tonight. My primary involvement's been with First Avenue and Well 9 during the construction phase of both of those projects. Maybe just a quick update on where they're at. You might notice First Avenue's been paved early last week, and Stripe 2, so it's in the service, and we'll be wrapping up that contract with Ward Construction shortly in the days to come. Also, with the Well 9 pump station, Snyder's looking at wrapping up a few electrical items this week and doing some of their own testing, and startups scheduled for Friday. So we'll be starting it up with the intent that it could operate on its own and it's part of the system. See how that goes, but we're optimistic.
Okay.
So for well nine, I'd like to present, there's two change orders Snyder's requested. I'll go through change order number two and then follow with change order number four. Any of you have questions, you can feel free to interrupt me. I'll do my best to answer or at the end. Starting with change order number two, this change order was a result of, in the early stages of the project, we encountered groundwater in our excavation, and the way that the floor drain piping in the building was laid out and the elevation of static elevation of water we were seeing, it would have allowed water into the building. And so the changes primarily were a rearrangement of the floor drain piping, an inclusion of a sump and a pump, and the rebar and the concrete and the grading, and some additional fittings and electrical to run to the pump. And that's primarily the big picture item for that. There's details in this that I'd be happy to go over if you'd like, but and there was also a water stop included in that change to do our best to, if seasonal groundwater is going to be seen at depths that could get in the building, to do our best to keep a building water tight, the structure water tight. So, does anybody have any questions?
Okay. What did you dig down for the footings?
What's that?
What did you dig down for the footings?
Oh, there's a chlorine sump in where the chlorine injects into the pipes. I think the bottom of footing in that's probably about a 10-foot cut, and we were seeing groundwater above top of footing, or proposed top of footing at that time. So we rearranged our plans. And
so what did the change order consist of primarily?
The change order consisted primarily of, there was a concrete sump that was cast into the floor of the structure, so the work to do that with the concrete sub. Grading, there's like a half horse corrosion resistant sump pump that was included. A circuit was ran for operate the pump. There was some additional floor drain piping, some FRP grading to cover the sump. I think that includes it. Most of the changes, there was a small credit for, we were originally discharging the drain pipe to a double barrel dry well, and so we eliminated one of those barrels. There was a small credit for that. It was one of those things where the cost to haul it back and the restocking fee was pretty steep, and the city wouldn't have gotten a very good credit. So in turn, Public Works, we talked and decided that they would just take that material, and we just got a credit for the labor to dig a little bit larger of a hole. So this change is, I apologize for the delay it probably seems like, but we've been on, I think, our third iteration of this, just making sure that we feel comfortable, and there's data that meeting with City and Public Works that we feel good about making a recommendation for.
Okay, and then the other
one. Yeah, change order number two. This was for, the city had requested after we start construction to have the ability to vent the motor control center in the pump station, to vent it inside the building in the winter months and capture that heat, and then be able to mechanically dampen it and then exhaust it outside of the building in the summer. And so this was, that's what this includes. There was some rearranging of the MCC and the VFD and some custom shrouds that were needed to make, from what I understand, for the duct work and some additional dampers and louvers. But
okay, so the staff has reviewed this proposed payment application and they recommend approval by the council. Is there any further questions of Jake? Okay. Entertain a motion to approve these change orders for the well number nine project.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Jake. And then you were going to go on and answer the change order on First Avenue project, right?
Yeah, so there was a change that was made, mostly just a swap of bid items for this project. Originally, there was a fabric that was specified in the contract to be put underneath the new asphalt to add strength to it. And the city had decided to, in lieu of that fabric, install, it's like a fiber mesh, high tensile strength, fiber mesh, kind of like what you put in concrete. Instead of that, it ended up being just about a cost swap, I think, a $37 credit, but, so.
Any questions on the credit? Entertain a motion.
Yeah, right.
Thank you for the back.
Staff has reviewed the proposed payment and approves, and recommends approval by the council. I entertain a motion.
Make that motion.
I second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you, Jacob. Okay, item 4.6 is the annual vaccination clinic, and Heather Miller, animal control officer, is here to make a request.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So the time of year is coming around for our annual vaccination clinic. We held our first one in 2014 with Adams County Pet Rescue and Hays Hills Vet Clinic. We had amended the Chapter 6 municipal code at that time to allow us to do this every year. But with that being said, the veterinarian needs her payment, which we do split with Adams County Pet Rescue. They pay half, the city pays half to get Dr. Sorensen and her staff out here to administer the vaccinations. She increased her cost only $10 this year, so the total would be $860, our half being $430, and that just would amend the contract with Adams County Pet Rescue, and then they pay Sheena. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if there's any questions on the clinic. I think usually we see a little over 100 people at the clinic, roughly 60, so are those do obtain a license through the city, be it a new puppy, or they just haven't got around to doing it yet and they're waiting for the next low cost that we provide. But we get quite a crowd coming in, and
also identify dangerous dogs that are in the city. And
yeah, they bring their dangerous dogs out in public, and so we get a good idea where they live, and that's always fun.
Yeah. Thank you, Heather. Is there any questions, Council? Okay, I entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Item 4.7 is a personnel policy change, and Spencer has, he brought this up in a staff meeting, and so Spencer, you were going to discuss this change.
Yes, we're proposing a minor change to the personnel policy. Right now, our personnel policy allows for tips on meals when we're out traveling for city-related purposes. It allows for tips up to 18%, and we're seeing when tips are made, they're commonly made for 20%. Somebody has a $10 meal, and they give a $2 tip. That's 20%. So what we're proposing tonight is to modify the personnel policy to change the 18% to 20%. Ultimately, the additional cost to the city is pretty minimal. It's another 20 cents on every $10 meal. but what it will save is all the time calculating or recalculating the tips and the reimbursement amounts from 20% down to 18%.
Council?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes they're automatic, these tips. Mm-hmm. Go on.
Yeah, they come on your bill.
Yeah. They're already added to your bill. So I think it's a good change.
Yep.
Okay. Need a motion?
Make it.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 4.8 is an ordinance titled emergency powers of mayor, city council administrator, and chief Bill.
Mine's not as easy as Spencer's. Okay, so as we're going through the emergency management plan, identifying what we would do, how we would do it for emergencies in the city, we actually put in front of council earlier this year the emergency management. We adopt the county's emergency management plan by contract, and that would be what we'd use. We'd use their center during a major emergency. What this does, and one of the things that, you know, I meant to put them in front of council together. In fact, the first ordinance, which was, I think, 2.60, refers to this ordinance, 2.62, which doesn't exist yet. But what this does is, in a catastrophic emergency, so we're not talking, and I'm going to put it, we're not talking something simple like we don't have enough water. And to put that in light, not being simple, but
maybe something like this fertilizer plant catching on fire.
This would be a very significant event where, for example, and if you look at the 2.62020, it actually has a succession plan in case most of the council aren't available, mm-hmm. by either being injured, dead, or, you know, just unavailable. Down to the point, but somebody's got to stay in charge. So what this does is this is part of what we're putting, where I'm looking at now is a continuity of operations, continuity of government plan, where we would actually be able to keep functioning. This would give the mayor or whoever's acting mayor the ability to proclaim a civil emergency, order evacuations, or order quarantines, and other kind of things that might need to happen in a very, very significant event. It would allow the mayor to say that, and a lot of options are built in where, you know, things can be scratched out or things could be added. But for example, if we had a very significant riot where we had 1,000 people come from another city or all across the nation to come cause problems in our city, the mayor could enact this. Closing down liquor stores or the ability to sell liquor or the ability to sell guns and ammunition. I generally wouldn't suggest that because I'm a very strong supporter of the Constitution and our Second Amendment rights, but in this case, there are times when this kind of stuff would be necessary. But part of that is, once that proclamation's been made, the mayor has to publish it, so give it to the local newspaper, and get it in front of city council within 72 hours. So it does give the ability of the council to override it. If there was, you know, some situation where portions or the whole thing was done improperly. Additionally, it would allow the city administrator and mayor to go beyond the budget and actually do emergency purchases and emergency spending to save lives and or to save property. So, you know, Wenatchee probably did something similar when they had a firestorm coming their direction. My goal with this would be to put it up front now, get it in front of council, have it ready to go. So, and there's actually sample documents or two sample proclamations of what basically the mayor could almost handwrite the thing to get in front of the problem and or deal with it as quickly as we possibly could. So are there any questions? I hope you've had time to read it. It's actually fairly long. But majority of the content of this is the two attached proclamation samples.
Okay, so I guess before we go any further, Council, are you comfortable that you've had enough time to review this document and ready to make a decision tonight?
Mm-hmm. I will.
It's very broad. I mean, this is very broad in scope. So
we did find a typo earlier this evening, and that would be on the second to the last page where it actually refers to the county of Othello, where I was able to actually fix most of the issues, where we would actually provide a copy of this to the governor's office of the proclamation, to the governor's office and the county commissioners of Adams County. In fact, it says Othello County on one of them, so we'll fix that.
Yeah, so questions about the ordinance? Fairly broad curfews, discontinuance of sale of alcohol for threat from riot, violence, terrorist attack, storms, explosions, earthquakes. I think what you see today is a lot of times there was a lack of preparation, and so they weren't, the cities, towns weren't prepared. They didn't have, I think when we found out last year when we went through this, we had to hold that special meeting on the fireworks where we had to take action to protect the city from, even though state law was saying that, you know, you had to wait a year, we decided to act to protect our city under the emergency powers that we had at that time, which then caused our emergency services, our administrator, our police chief, in conjunction with the county and other agencies, to start to do tabletop sessions, and so that we can be as prepared, we have the documents in place in order for us to act and act quickly. And so this is extremely important, regardless of who's the mayor or who is in, it has this line of succession that is extremely important, identifies specifically who it is. What if I'm out of town? What if I'm killed in a riot or something? We need to specify who's next, who steps up, who takes the lead. And I think that this document gives us all those answers. And I'm sure that, you know, in an emergency, we may find some things, but I think today this gives us our best response to an emergency situation. All right?
Sure.
Any other comments?
No.
Okay. So then I'd entertain a motion to adopt this.
2.62?
Yes, this ordinance.
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thanks, Chief. We'll move to item 5.1 on unfinished business. At our last council meeting, former Councilman Ken Johnson was concerned about his business and the speed limit on Broadway. And so tonight we have the council directed the staff to identify what the cost would be for a speed study and safety review of our speed limit in that particular area of town. And Travis, you have a presentation.
Yes, thank you very much. I give you three documents for this item. One of them is specifically the proposal, the cost proposal from Morrison Merrily, and they indicated it would take approximately $4,000 worth of estimated time on this. And it has seven main things that they would do. They would look at the 85th percentile information. They would also do three additional gathering of information on three different intersections within that seven block stretch. They would look at the road characteristics. We did this, or I did this as part of my review. It is 100 feet of right-of-way as required by code. It actually has 75 feet of surfacing, whereas our code requires 70. And then there's also sidewalks on both sides, although I don't think they meet the 8-foot sidewalk standards. So a lot of this information will already be done, so hopefully that should keep the cost down. The parking practices, during this stretch, there is actually no road, or there's no curbside parking on 5 of the 7 blocks, so that shouldn't take too much time. The roadside development of the 7 blocks up and down on both sides, so really we're talking 14 block lengths. There's only 5 undeveloped lots there, so there's not a lot of development or redevelopment. There's no environmental issues they'll have to look at. History of crashes is probably the one thing that they will take a look at and give us some feedback on. And there's other undefined factors that they will look at. One of the things that I will do, and that is, if you authorize for this study to be done, is I will have that in hand so that next time I'm looking at something, I will gather the additional information that you need. One of the important things I found out since our last conversation is you don't actually need a professional engineer or an engineering study to do this. The gentleman that we are going to use is actually a planner like I am. He is a transportation planner, and he works under the supervision of an engineer. So while it says engineering study, the engineering aspect of it is simply a survey to make sure that it meets the width standards and the turning radiuses. And we could all do that inside because using Google Earth and plans that we already have on file for these roads, we don't necessarily need to hire an outside to do it. But given that there are safety issues raised with this one, it might be worth it for us to do it the first time so we know how to make it easier next time.
Council, you have an opinion?
So what you're saying is engineers are going to cost us around $4,000?
For a engineering and safety study, that's correct.
Okay. So how long is this going to drag out? I mean, what I'm thinking is we're not going to change signs back to 25 just because, are we?
No. As a matter of fact, you could potentially need a study to reduce it back to the original speed because it's already been posted.
So we're just going to bring this up to.
So this would give us the documentation to either justify what you've done or to justify lowering it back to what it originally was.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, should we direct staff to proceed?
Yes.
Authorize the mayor to sign it?
Yes.
The contract? Yes. Entertain a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Yeah. Motion's been made second to approve this contract. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Yes. I also included two documents that were in there as I wanted to bring you up to speed that I had done a couple RFPs, requests for proposals for both traffic engineering professional services and also hearings examiners, as I had been asked to do. So those had both gone out, and I included the two respondents to the traffic engineering RFP, and that is JUB Engineering and Morrison Merrily. And so I showed you, or I gave you copies of their proposals and I think their contract. So just to let you know, I'll probably be coming to you in 2 weeks to ask you to propose signing two contracts. They're on-call contracts, meaning that as stuff like this comes up, we can simply contact them, ask them for two bids, take the one that we like best, and just engage them without having to do contracts again.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you. We could bring something else up under unfinished business, and that is the water tower logo. We're now down to the point where the firm that is doing the rehabilitation work on our water tower is ready to paint the logo on the Lions Park towers. And so we have a 3 million gallon and a 1 million gallon tank. In the past, we just had Lions Park. Okay.
A little bit of information. The 1 million tank's already been painted and sealed, so we were late to need on that. So it would just be the 3 million.
Oh, it is just the 3 million.
So we're just going to have the white tanks there.
Yeah. What?
Okay. Was it the 1 million gallon that had Lions Park on it? Is that still on there, or did they just paint over it? They just painted over it.
Okay, so. I guess there's been input, and I'll just tell you what the input has been. I'm bringing this up because I don't want to make the decision myself. I think the council should have some input. There's been input that we put the Sandhill Crane Festival logo that they have on the water tower. There's been suggestions that the city will follow what its logo on there. And, yes, go ahead.
Oh, no, our seal.
Our seal.
Okay.
So, there's also been some other ridiculous ones that we won't mention, but.
Why not go with the same thing that's down by Scooby?
Welcome to Othello?
No.
Oh, red, white,
striped. Striped one with Othello?
I don't want to make it a billboard.
you know, advertising the rodeo and everything else.
No. I would say, go with the logo, with the city seal, if we're going with anything, because it's representative of all those things.
Okay, what did it say? Did it just say Lions Park before?
Yeah, it just said Lions Park.
I'd like to see the seal on it.
The city seal?
Yes, sir.
I wouldn't mind the other one saying Lions Park, but I would say the big one should be the city seal. And like I said, that's representative of all those things, because it has a crane on there, and our, it has a lot of different representatives.
How easy would that be to reproduce? I mean, what's the cost factor?
Is that included?
There's going to be a cost for it, just to figure some block letters, just a line park. There'd be an additional cost.
Okay, so I want to go back to the $1 million that used to say Lions Park. Were we supposed to, I mean, were they not going to replace that? Or, I mean, what was the discussion?
When they came to council and talked to council, when they did the $1 million tank, you asked them to hold position for the logo. At that point, they came on through, and you didn't have anything of that nature at that time that you decided on, so you decided to move to the $3 million. They're at the $3 million now, ready for some kind of answer by Wednesday.
Well, just because we didn't catch it at that particular moment doesn't mean, why does that mean we can't go back and get the Lions Park put on the $1 million?
You can do what you want. You can put it up there.
Okay, so what are we talking? How much kind of money are we talking?
I don't know that. To put that seal up, I don't know that. I had to come up with some kind of an idea first to get a number.
Okay, so do you think you could get a number from them if we do the seal, and also get a number on putting the Lions Park? And then the council then, once they know that number, then they can vote on that at the midnight city council meeting. Okay,
we'll do.
All right.
Thank you.
Is there any other unfinished business? Anybody wants to bring that up? Okay, item six is new business, and currently we don't have anything on our agenda for this May 2nd workshop week from tonight, and so I'm going to ask the council, do you want to cancel our meeting for May 2nd workshop, or is there some things that you guys think that we're behind on and would like to get more information?
I'd like to cancel it.
Cancel. Okay. Need a motion?
I'd make that motion.
Second.
We have a motion made and seconded to cancel the May 2nd, 2016 workshop. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Debbie, will you notify the paper properly? Thank you. You know the paper's here, but I think we have notified the paper in writing. Then, tonight, the council will receive department head reports and planning commission minutes. In those minutes, again, I just want to remind the council, is the discussion on the marijuana ordinance. Planning commission voted 3-2 to ban it in sale, distribution, and retail sale, processing, and
production.
So, when we get together again on the 9th, there will also be some staff information provided, and then we'll have our public hearing. I'm certain we're going to get some public comment on that, and I would appreciate the council ready to have those discussions. So with that, and having no further business to come before the city council, I'll close our meeting tonight at 8 p.m.